standing by. This conference is now being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's call of the Zone File Access Advisory Group. I am going to start by taking roll and then turn the meeting over to our co-chairs, Vladimir and Rod. So on the line, we have Brian Q, Tatiana, Mark McFadden, John McCormick, Vladimir Shadronoff, Barry Cobb, Rod Houston, Dave Piscatello. Am I missing anyone? Hearing none. And a quick review of the agenda before passing it off to Rod and Vladimir. Item number two is talking about achieving a consensus on the ZFA approach, and this really is associated with the milestone that we at least agreed to, I think, several weeks ago about taking a vote no later than April 29th, which is next week's call, on what our approach to this is going to be and what our recommendation to the ICANN new GTLD implementation team is going to be. So I think the purpose of today's call largely to discuss where we are, try and answer as many outstanding questions as we can, and move us along to that, what I hope is a consensus position on the approach. Item number three is a discussion around the mandatory ZFA service, and then item number four is one last look at the cost modeling that Rod has done. So if we pop back up to item number two, Rod or Vlad, do you want to take the helm, or do you want to have Dave Piscatello quickly review the changes that were made to the last version of the document that he circulated?
Yeah, Dave. Sure. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, a review would be good. I'm actually still driving in the office right now, so I can't really take the helm of anything but my steering wheel at the moment.
Then you should focus on your steering wheel. Dave, are you back with us?
Yes, I am.
Dave, so I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, following discussion on the mail list about the clearinghouse plus the enhanced bilateral and some reservations that Rick Wilhelm, I believe, had expressed regarding the need or non need for an explicit external authentication service, I amended the thought paper that I originally wrote. To have the clearinghouse be even lighter weight than it previously had, and to allow for a clearinghouse and enhanced bilateral approach that essentially utilized the clearinghouse as an agent that does the contract work in collaboration with individual registries. And then upon approval of a consumer by the registry, takes on the responsibility of generating the credentials for consumers, creates a file or data structure of all the consumers for each registry, and then the registries simply go on a periodic basis, for example, daily, to perhaps an FTP server that's operated by the clearinghouse, to essentially download the credentials, or they could be pushed to the registry. Either way would work. But this then enables the registries to run their own authentication service directly without having to do the kind of radius exchange that I had described in the first thought paper. So the modification or simplification is pretty straightforward. Instead of having a per consumer connection query to an authentication service, the registries acquire a list of all the consumers' credentials and then do authentication local to their own operation. And there are probably a few currency issues that we'd have to just work out in terms of making certain that the contract, I think in particular, would say there might be a 1 hour to a 24-hour delay if you lose your credentials and you provide new ones. There might be a 1 to 24-hour delay when you first start the service, as we as the registries will pull the authentication database or file from the clearinghouse. But this really reduces the operational footprint quite a bit, and I think that was a good suggestion by John and or observation by John and based on Rick's original worry. That's, I think, all I have to say. I think it's only about a 2.5-page paper now that describes the whole process, but it still works compatibly with the original data standardization effort. There was some subsequent discussion about perhaps having some additional information that might be standardized in the form of a README file when a consumer first gets credentials from the clearinghouse that would essentially explain to him exactly how he has to access individual registries and what the criteria are. And I think that's a valuable addition as well.
Thank you, Dave. Lack of discussion on the list on this proposal, which was posted on Monday 3 days ago, makes me feel that it's a good candidate for a consensus model. So, and really, are there any objections or anyone would like to comment on this? I have a comment on my own. I still have certain concerns over the costing issue. Lightweight in this hybrid proposal is really something that shouldn't cost more than some very reasonable amount. But I think there's a difference whether who will be the party that manages this lightweight central registration service. My point of view, the two different options are whether it will be ICANN or whether it will be someone else, some other party. And personally, I would prefer if ICANN could take the service on, because and actually absorb the cost of running it, or funding it through the registry fees or whatever. Because my feeling is that if we outsource this service to some third party, this will actually cost more, and we'll end up, we may end up in the same discussion how the model is going to be funded. So I would actually support this hybrid model if ICANN agrees to run it.
I think that we would have to get the community to say that, and then have ICANN management sit down and cost out what it would be. I understand exactly what you're saying, and I think that there are several ways that you can interpret your perception. One is that somehow within ICANN's existing IT structure, this sort of falls on an existing service, a server or operational machine. But I don't, and that some part of the services department would be doing the contractual work in complement to what it does today. Both those things are doable. I don't know whether they're doable without additional overhead. I mean, they're not things that we do today, so there's got to be a cost somewhere. And the real question is whether it would cost more for ICANN to do it or more for someone else to do it, right?
Yep.
I think we want to ask ICANN, if I could offer an opinion, we want to ask ICANN, to look at, what it would cost internally, and to look at what it would cost, to have a third party do it, and see what that cost might be.
Yeah, can we take this as an action point for Craig or for...
I got it, Vlad. I didn't really want to broach that conversation internally until we were pretty far along in our thought process and our agreement on what we might like to do.
Yeah, good point.
And it sounds like we may almost be there.
Yeah.
This is Brian. Can I jump in?
Sure.
Yeah, and Barry after Brian, please.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's one other question that needs to be thought through before this starts becoming a proposal that's getting crunched, which is the question of the operational aspect of providing zone file access. There is an overarching question that's surfaced in the DNS cert proposal and elsewhere about ICANN engaging in operational aspects as opposed to its traditional technical coordinating role. It's a very important question. It's a high-level question, and it's one that I think would apply here. I certainly agree I don't know if it was Vladimir, whoever said that, you'd want community input on this question. That would be essential as well. But I would be hesitant to say, scope this out, cost this out, and make a proposal for ICANN to operate this, because I can tell you that question is a delicate one, and one that you probably want to get some vetting through the community first before you put it out. And Craig, I'm, in part referring to some of the reaction to the DNS cert proposal coming out of Nairobi. We don't need to have there are better ways and smoother ways to surface that sort of a question, is I guess what I'm suggesting.
So do you, Brian, I know Barry, you're in the queue, but Brian, I just want to come back to you with a question or maybe a point of clarification. When you talk about operational aspects,
mm-hmm.
and given the way it looks like this model is headed, with the registry still providing the data and the registry still doing the authenticating or whatever level of authentication it is that they do now, and ICANN having ICANN or some third party, let me be clear about that, having some administrative role around centralizing the point of access or the points of access to the registries, is that still considered operational?
I think everything you just said is important there, Craig, and I think that how it is characterized and how it is understood is going to be important. If there is a proposal that I can take it on, the very clear articulation, as you just did, that carefully defines what the operational aspect is, or underscores how minimal it is going to be important. So I'm not saying, stop the trains. I'm just calling out that this is a sensitive issue, as many of us know, and let's be very thoughtful about how we surface this.
And I think this really kind of falls under the area, and I'm sorry, I can't remember whether it was Mark's writing or whether it was Dave's, where we talked about roles and responsibilities. And I think it's in that section that where we need to do the writing that, or at least some of the writing that Brian just talked about. Barry, you want to go ahead?
Thanks, Craig. Yes, it's Barry. I agree. Those are definitely great comments about all of that. I liken it to the picket fence discussion as to, what is within scope of policy definition or not, the same way in terms of the scope of ICANN and the role they play in the DNS world. in reference to what Vladimir was saying, I support exactly what he is saying as well. I think I'm more inclined to favor ICANN performing the clearinghouse part of the proposal, because I think if anything, it makes, you know, my gut tells me it makes the most sense, but, you know, everything that we've discussed, it also seems the least path of resistance for the fact of, you know, A, a cost perspective, but B, there's also the legal perspective, and introducing a third party based on some things that we've seen on the list or previous discussions sounds that could complicate things a little bit more than ICANN doing it. And then my closing comment is, most definitely, if we are leaning towards that proposal of a hybrid model that contains both the clearinghouse and the enhanced bilateral, we're definitely, you know, I think we're going to, as was mentioned, you know, the community is going to have to vote on this, basically, or buy into the fact that we would push or lean towards ICANN performing that role. And as I'm sure everybody knows on this call, that's going to be hit with a lot of resistance just for the fact that there's several out there in the community that don't believe ICANN should be any bigger than what it is, or that it's too big today. Just on that premise alone is going to be tough. So whichever way, we're going to have to definitely sell it to the community that this is the best thing to go forward. And, you know, whether it does fall in the operational space or not, I certainly believe that kind of the clearinghouse component gatekeeping who has the access or what people are accessing zone files or not really is a part of the security and stability component of ICANN's mission. And so I think that that's very important. If we were positioning the concept around that, I think we can get some more support and buy-in. Thank you.
This is Brian. Can I jump in?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I have to take issue with some of those points. Number one, I'm happy to be wrong on this, but I disagree with you. I don't think so much the resistance on ICANN being big is going to be the issue of operational. That is absolutely a tripwire in a number of key places in the community. So, to me, that's where we need to be thoughtful. I also disagree, with the notion of us selling it to the community. I think what we owe to the community is a fact-based, very clear presentation of what the proposals are. And then what we should do is take the community feedback as we get it and factor it into what the final recommendation and implementation is. Those are my points.
Barry, if I may respond. You're absolutely right, Brian. I didn't mean to overstep my bound by selling it. I would say that the proposal should say, you know, proposal A is ICANN run it, proposal B is some other party run it. You know, it's up to the community to decide. I didn't mean, so I retract my selling comment. Thank you for clearing that.
This is Mikey. I'd like to get in the queue.
Go ahead, Mikey.
I guess I want to go back to the fundamental reason for Vlad wanting to do this with ICANN. I'm not sure that this is going to be very expensive for a third party to run. You know, it doesn't seem like it's that hard. And I do think, in a way, it's a bit crisper to leave the operating of this gizmo outside of the ICANN tent. So, Vlad, can you kind of replay that part of the reasoning for me? I wanted to make sure that there wasn't something else in what you were saying that I missed, because I think if it's purely a cost thing.
Yeah, I thought that ICANN has actually, it already is in the kind of center of all the links that are in the
the main industry first. Second, ICANN has already has the stuff, already has the servers, already has the just. I think the majority of the components that need to be in place for running such a service. If we imagine someone else doing that, then we need to add the cost something like insurance or any costs that are related to this extra obligation of that third party before ICANN. So. And then we probably need to account for some profit for the third party. So I have really strong feeling that if ICANN runs that, then first there should be no objections from the community. Second, it's the question of funding just goes away because it is lightweight in this version, and it's really. I think there will be some place in ICANN budget to fund this. And third, it's really easy to run it.
Thanks, Vlad. This is Mikey again. I guess I kind of like the approach that Barry kind of implied just a minute ago, where maybe we leave that question as a separate topic, and we say, well, here's what the group seems to be coming to consensus around in terms of what to do, but there's some choices in terms of how to do it, because Brian raises, I think, if in fact this is really the first operational thing, sort of the nose of the camel getting into the tent, then I can see how the broader community could get pretty excited about this. I'm not by any means an expert on that stuff, but I've been in other places where the nose of the camel appeared and suddenly you had the whole camel. That got to be kind of a problem. So,
well, if there's a solution where this will be run by some third party, and at the same time, the registry fees will not increase, and the zone files, the zone file access will remain free for consumers. Then why not? Probably this is, but I wonder in what way are you suggesting to get community input out of it on it? I mean, the result of this group's work is supposed to be some document that will become a basis for something included in the DAG 4. So, and I believe that the decision on whether this should be ICANN or someone else should come before it's included in the DAG 4. Or am I on the wrong track?
Oh, I agree with Nick. Sorry to monopolize. I'll shut off here in a minute. But I agree that the decision ought to be made. I'm just not sure that we're the ones that need to make it. And I think that part of the reason I want to do that is to kind of get us focused back on the broad approach, you know, a hybrid of the two proposals seems to be where we're headed, and I would hate to have it get stuck on this one point, because I really think that the hybrid approach that we're talking about will work, and I'm not sure that where it's done really matters that much. That's just me.
Well, what we can do is get some input from ICANN, and if there is a feeling that ICANN is likely to agree running it, then Greg, when do you think we will be able to get some feedback from ICANN? Is it next week, or is it when can we discuss it within the group? Is it next call 2 weeks from now?
It I think that would be possible, you know, given all the considerations that Brian just raised, and, you know, I understand the sensitivities around this all, you know, all too well. I still think it would be possible to get some preliminary feedback from ICANN before the next call. I mean, it could be absolutely not. It could be, you know, it could be let's talk about it some more. It could be that it, you know, it actually makes it may sound like it makes sense based on community input. So it could be the range, but I do think that we could, you know, at least get the temperature of what ICANN is thinking about it.
Yeah, and then we could phrase the suggestion accordingly. So,
and as I think someone, you know, it was either Mikey or maybe it was Vlad that just commented, you know, what goes into this next version of the guidebook isn't necessarily final. I mean, we've had public comments on all of the guidebooks. I suspect, and I'm not speaking with any insider information or any specific knowledge, because I'm just not part of that team, but I would suspect that there would be public comment again on this next version of the guidebook, and that, you know, the whatever is presented in the terms of zone file access would be subject to that public comment as well. So I don't think by any means that, you know, what this group puts forward is, you know, it's not the end of the road.
Okay.
Anyone else like to, you know, whether John or Tatiana or anyone else like to speak on this particular item?
This is Barry. Just one quick point is, you know, I think we're slightly kind of cart before the horse, at least in terms of the agenda. Is it agreed upon in the ZFA working group that the hybrid model is the way that we want to start focusing on, or is there still some collateral of the other models that we still need to consider?
Well, technically, we do not have a consensus, but we still have time to vote, right?
Yeah,
so
I think we're in a seven. I think we now have 7 votes for the hybrid and 5 for just the enhanced. So we're getting further along in this hybrid model, at least for those who are interested in it. But I think by next week, by the 29th, is when we said we need to, you know, we need to put a stake in the ground and say, you know, this is how we want to head. Yes, there are implementation details and roles and responsibilities to be defined, but generally we think that this makes the most sense for the consumers and the providers and the community in general.
And Ms. Barry, if I may respond real quick, then the 5 that are on the enhanced bilateral, I guess for the good of the group, let's understand what the gaps are so that we can really focus on those. Because I don't know that 7 and 5 is enough to say that we really got, you know, strong consensus about this.
I agree.
So we got to get that right first. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree with you, Barry.
This is Dave Piscatella. One of the things that I've struggled in trying to understand the enhanced bilateral is how the business end, the contractual end, is managed. I sort of understand how we can get some reduction in complexity in the operational side, but I still haven't seen anyone kind of write up the contract side and how that changes. So I would write it, but I don't know how it happens. So if there's someone who is an advocate of the among the 5 that say that, you know, that they prefer the enhanced bilateral, who could articulate in 2 or 3 pages, as I did with the, you know, with the hybrid, I think it would be useful to be able to look at two proposals side by side and actually be able to weigh them and assess them a little bit more than just by name and the one or two paragraph summary that existed in the original paper.
This is Rod. On that last comment, I think we need that regardless because we're talking about a hybrid. In that there is a kind of this assumption around how the contracts are normalized, right? So whether or not it's probably fairly easy if you have a clearinghouse that can actually manage that. If you don't, you still have to have some sort of enforcement mechanism or some auditing mechanism or something within ICANN to make sure that the registries are actually, you know, conforming to the whatever, you know, the agreed upon format is. So even in the enhanced bilateral, I don't think you get out of having some sort of administrative responsibility that's going to, you know, have some sort of increase within ICANN itself. It's probably not very significant, but it's still there. But that question certainly will have to be answered. But I think that you're getting into almost more of the implementation side of things. I don't know if we need to dive that deep at this point.
Anyone else? We have one other issue within item 2 of the agenda, which is there was a proposal that the zone file access agreement should be changed to support, let's say, dissemination of zone file information to, for example, some other party that has already signed the same agreement. What's the members' view on whether it is feasible, whether we should do that, whether we should recommend that? I basically see that as I see some issues with this proposal, though I agree that it may be worthwhile to support creation of some model where a party could sell, upsell, or provide some services, some extra services, processing zone files and so on. But as I mentioned previously, and that was as the registry stakeholder group mentioned, it's important to ensure that registries actually know who accesses the zone file. So I at the moment I cannot imagine how can we modify the agreement in the way that registries still have control over who accesses the data.
This is item 2.3 on the agenda, basically, Vladimir. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Right. So the thought here is that we have a lot of things have come out in the various models we've discussed where people have shown that or talked about various benefits that could be had by, you know, doing things like differential files or, you know, stripping out DNSSEC or doing things that would provide different types of zone files and different kind of, I guess you'd call value add that you can have, or that people may want to still go to one place to get it from a consumer side. Which isn't, you know, the one place to go get it isn't possible under the current model or current contract because you have this you can't pass it through issue. So, you know, in order to get those kinds of benefits, it could be done through a third party. Has been suggested many times by many people that there could be a marketplace for it, but only if there was a legal way to do it. If you're going to have this hybrid model we're talking about, you could still get some of those benefits by having this kind of pass-through concept. I think from a legal perspective, what you'd want to do is to have whoever's
signed on to do that, signed on with the registries to do that and have an agreement that they would provide information about who was accessing that to the registries. I think that could still be passed, that information could be passed through. It's really just a matter of writing contracts that work that way. I don't know if it's that hard.
And so, yeah, Rod, that's actually kind of a good segue, and I'm not trying to change the subject, but the discussion that we had on last week's call on whether consumers would only be able to access zone file information directly through the clearinghouse or whether they could contract directly with registries. You know, is participation in whatever model we come up with, is it mandatory? Is it voluntary? You know, what are the terms? And I think when you talk about potentially amending the zone file access agreement to enable, you know, either an aggregator or some other third party to do some service, that almost seems like it would need to be handled between the registry and that particular consumer if the rights that they're going to get are kind of over and above the standard. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. It really gets, and one of the other points there was that some of the new registries, you know, in particular, we've gotten some feedback that some of the smaller registries didn't want to have to provide this service directly and that they would like to have some sort of third party
right.
be able to disseminate things. So I emphasize that too. But you know, it would be an enhanced, I guess, set of rights and responsibilities for that, that consumer, as it were, and so that's it certainly introduces a different concept into the mix. But it does answer your question quite neatly about whether or not it would have to be mandatory then if you could do it that way.
So that was a question I actually bounced off of some folks at ICANN about, you know, whether registries could make information available. Well, the reverse is actually whether consumers could get information directly from the registries or whether they would have to go through this through the provider, whoever the provider is. And the response that I got from ICANN was that, you know, it's within the scope of the work of this group to define whether they think participation should be voluntary or mandatory.
And then there's the question too. Then is on whether mandatory or not. If you don't have a mandatory type of at least normalization of contracts and things like that, you may as well not be even doing the work from that perspective. Because then you basically say, well, you should be doing this, but you don't have to, and then you get half the registries doing it and half of them don't, or something like that down the road. Then you end up with probably even worse mess than we're worried about right now. So I mean, there may be aspects of this that would be mandatory and potentially those that are not. I don't know. It's a good one for discussion.
This is Mikey. I think we've got too many questions on the table at once. We might want to break this into some chunks. You know, I think the question that Vlad raised about amending the contract to allow essentially third parties to redistribute the zone file is different than the question that Craig, you just added on. And so I think I'd like to split those. And then in terms of the mandatory, I think there's two questions in that as well. I think there's one question that is this mandatory for registries? And then another question is whether it's mandatory for subscribers. So I just lobby for a little chunking on this rather than all at once. I think it's too hard to chew through this all in one piece.
I just got really two questions, and the second one having two parts to it. The first one is around amending the contract to allow distribution of the zone by a third party. The second question is the mandatory question, and that has two parts, whether it's mandatory for registries, you know, in new GTLDs, and is it mandatory for subscribers? I don't know that we can make it mandatory for subscribers since they're not, you know, a party to they're not a party to the agreement.
Yeah, I don't think I can make that move.
I guess, you know, the way I heard the question originally was, could subscribers go directly to a registry, or did they have to go through?
Right, so the flip side is, is it mandatory for registries to make zone file information available only through the clearinghouse, or can they contract on their own independently?
Right, and really, we're not talking. There's no data coming through the clearinghouse, though. There's just a process, clearinghouse process for getting your access credentials, and for I guess the just the initial contracting. There's not really anything beyond that. So it's really just instead of saying going through the clearinghouse, it's using the clearinghouse process might be more appropriate.
Well, basically, there's a legacy issue. We have a few hundred people that already have access to the data. What we're going to do with them? If we introduce the clearinghouse, do you suggest that those people should reapply and get a new set of credentials, or they can continue using the existing credentials to access the data?
Yeah, I would think that would be up to the existing registries. And, you know, that adds the other question is would this model be mandatory for the existing registries, right? Which is, because if the answer is no, then, you know, then you've got a kind of a combination of legacy and anything new. And this is really about the new GTLD zones anyways. I don't know if we actually have, I mean, we can make a recommendation that, you know, things might change, but we're talking about new TLDs anyways. But I could certainly see where if you have a simplified model like that, where a lot of the registries may just take advantage of that and say, well, hey, this is a lot easier. It's a data port, you know, you basically got a data porting thing at that point. You want to figure out how to handle normalizing credentials and things like that, because you have different ones for different registries in existence. So, but that all comes under, I think, the auspices of implementation. It's really the question to answer right now is whether or not you'd want to do anything as far as a recommendation for existing registries.
Well, it seems like you might have a few options, right? Existing registries could opt in if they wanted to, it seems. Another option might be that upon, you know, when existing registries renew their agreements, that there could be an option to opt in at that point, or if there's some movement to some standardized form of agreement, and I'm not necessarily sure that there will be, that could then, it could become a requirement. I'm not saying I advocate that, it's just one of the possibilities.
This is Barry. Can I get the cue, please?
Yeah, go ahead, Barry.
I understand the concerns about mandatory, both from the consumer perspective and, of course, from the registry perspective. My only concern, and I don't really like the word mandatory, but my concern is if we basically don't get 100% participation, you know, if it's the 80-20 rule or 50-50 rule, then we're really not buying ourselves anything. It completely destroys any cost modeling that we've tried to attempt. But at the very least, what we're going to wind up with, if we move forward with anything that is not 100% adoption, we're going to wind up with a train wreck process, and this is my own personal opinion, a train wreck process like we have in post-expiration of domain names. It just becomes too convoluted, much harder to manage, much harder to monitor, any efficiency gains are blown out of the water. So, I don't know how we proceed beyond trying to make it a mandatory thought, but that's just my two cents. Thank you.
This is Vladimir. I think what we're discussing here is making it mandatory for registries to support clearinghouse, and the options are actually for consumers. Whether so, as I understand the idea, the clearinghouse scheme will work. So any consumer should be able to go to the clearinghouse and get access to all the zone file data for all TLDs. But the question is whether, in addition to that, we should allow customers to go directly to registries and get a set of credentials individually from a registry.
And this is Barry again. Yes. Especially in the areas of where value-added services are going to be offered by the registries, that's pretty much a given. I would think that they would need separate credentials to get partial dumps or diff dumps and those different kinds of value-added things.
Is there anyone on the call who has access to some registry that's offering value-added services?
Is anyone getting VeriSign's Rapid Zone updates?
I just wonder whether you use the same credentials for just normal access to zone file data and for access to that value-added services.
This is Rod. I'm not currently, but I have done that. They had a separate access set up, if I remember correctly, for that, but I don't know what they're currently doing.
This is Mikey. I couldn't imagine that they would have the credentials be the same, because presumably they're charging for the rapid, for any enhanced services, and wouldn't want to.
Right, you can still manage subscriptions using the same credentials and just have different things showing up depending on what your credentials are, but. I don't know that the other services are almost it's a separate external issue from what we're talking about anyways. And certainly the registries are already have the ability to go provide those. And we're not talking about putting those through any sort of standardized clearinghouse model anyway. I think one important point on what Vladimir was saying is that you say basically it's a required plus optional versus required only, right? So if the registries are required the new registries are required to use this the model, that's a standard that everybody has and the consumers can access. And the question becomes, do we say you can beyond that, you can enter into contracts directly if you wish, or no, you can't have contracts directly with consumers? Is that kind of put it in a nutshell, Vladimir, what you were saying?
Yeah, you're right.
Now, I would say that, if you have the standard, you've taken care of the scaling issues and all the things that we were trying to accomplish with this. If somebody wants to go and do something extra on top of that, I don't know why you'd want to necessarily prohibit that. That's kind of gets... kind of towards almost overburdensome regulation. I'm sure it would be interpreted that way potentially. What are other people's thoughts on that?
So actually, what is mandatory here is for registries to support support the clearinghouse. That means any customer that enters into a registry agreement through the clearinghouse should be recognized by the registry as its own customer, and any credentials issued by a clearinghouse should be recognized by the registries. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, if the registry wants to take on its own, you know, costs and to manage individual relationships, I was like, go for it. if you know, I don't know how many will want to, but I guess people may have some special thing they want to set. But that actually could allow for a transition path for existing registries to manage a move towards adopting the clearinghouse, as far as being able to do both at the same time, for example. You know, so new customers or new consumers of zone files for an existing registry might come through the clearinghouse, and they can support their old ones and kind of gradually move them over or something like that. I mean, that might be convenient.
Yep. Okay, any other discussion on the choice of models ZFA service being mandatory or on agreement modifications?
This is Mikey. I'd like to take us back to the other chunk, which is the question of whether people could be allowed to redistribute zone files. I don't think we've run that one to ground yet.
No, we haven't run that to ground.
My inclination is to favor that. And so allow the marketplace to sort of solve this problem for us and maybe come up with some interesting solutions for people. Solves the problem of folks who want to get a single file or a compressed file or a diff file or something like that. I kind of like the direction that Rod was going, where if that were to be allowed, that part of that deal would be that the redistributor would have to let the registry know who was partaking of that, so that the registry would still have an authoritative list of who's getting the zone file, but allow people to do interesting things with it and redistribute it.
So I think, you know, I'm thinking about that some more, and I think what at the base level, what we need to be able to do is allow for that kind of thing to happen, but allow the registries to set up contracts that they're comfortable with, right? So as long as the obstacle is removed for them to do it, there's no requirement for them to do it, right? They don't have to allow access to a third party necessarily, but they can, and then they can contract them to say, okay, you do this, and, you know, if we say that this particular consumer that you're supporting is doing bad things, and you agree that if we ask you to, you will, you know, remove access, so you get that control passed through. But that can be enforced contractually. Because right now, that, you know, the biggest obstacle is it's just not allowed for somebody to do that. So if we, as the community or ICANN or whatever you want to call it, remove that obstacle, that allows the registries to enter into those kinds of agreements and that kind of innovation to happen. And we're not really dictating how that, you know, how that happens. It's just we remove the obstacle and people can go forward from there. That makes sense?
Yeah, I think that would be a great step, and would support that. Vlad, would you be okay with that?
I think Rod's comment is reasonable. Well, is anyone who would like to volunteer to draft some piece of text about it? I mean, something that we could include in the final document.
So you're basically saying, Vlad, take the existing zone file access agreement. I think Section 4 is where the prohibition against redistribution is laid out, and you're saying modify Section 4 to allow it. Is that
well, yes, but as Rod mentioned, there are other components to that proposal, so there should be some contractual means for the registry to see who accesses the zone file and to shut down access for a
or some user if required.
But I think the way to handle that is to say, modify Section 4, saying removing the prohibition if, you know, the prohibition against redistribution as long as the person who is doing the redistribution has a contract with the registry they're redistributing. Right? And then the all the rest of it, how it's done and all that, is really between the registry and that entity.
Yeah, and yeah, I don't think it goes in the access agreement.
Right, although, right. You don't want to specify all that stuff. Yeah,
sorry, I'm not getting it. So, okay, I'm the registry. You are the party that would like to redistribute the zone file. How do I? And Craig is the third party which gets zone file from you. If I don't like what Craig is doing, how I shut down Craig's access to the data?
Right, so you and I would be entered into a contract directly saying
into
that you're in that.
Into which contract?
This is separate from the zone file access agreement. This is our the problem. The zone file access agreement right now prohibits it. So let's say that the zone file access agreement says you can do this if you have a separate contract.
Separate contract. Okay, then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And then you enforce that through the separate contract. Right. All I'm really saying here is make the prohibition, I guess leave the prohibition except allow an exception if you have a contract between, because you and I want to do this, right? That's the whole point, but we can't because the zone file access agreement doesn't allow us. So make it basically say if you have a direct contract relationship, you can do this, right? And then, you know, however that you set that up is up to you and you know, between the two of you.
So what you suggest is actually it will be optional for registries. So one registry could agree to allow some redistribution of its data. The other registry could say that we are not content with it and we do not want to enter into any other agreements.
Yes, exactly.
Well, then that's fine.
So to me it sounds like a really minor tweak to Section 4 of the current zone file access agreement.
Right.
I
was going to say the main reason, rationale behind this isn't necessarily the value-added services. I think that could, because people may want to do that, they may want to talk to registries and say, hey, I can do this, and maybe we can make some money at it. So maybe that'll happen. But the main rationale was for some of these smaller registries that don't want to stand up a service, that they can then enter into this kind of an arrangement and be able to get this handled without them having to take on all those costs. It really solves that problem for them. That's it.
Okay.
Oh, we need somebody to write that up, though.
I'm taking that.
Okay.
I view that as an ICANN action.
Okay, seems we have finished items 2 and 3 on the agenda. So, Rod, would you like to make a speech on the cost model?
I don't know about a speech, but given the lack of comment, either it's so hard that nobody can figure it out, which is certainly wouldn't surprise me. It's fairly complicated. Or, you know, we've been kind of evolving, you know, with the group towards this hybrid model we've been seeming to be centering around. So this other stuff isn't nearly as interesting anymore. But there certainly hasn't been a lot of comments past the last iteration that came out, I think, over a week ago now. The one thing I was going to do, which I hadn't had an opportunity to do yet, was to do the simplification of the dials and knobs and have a single page where you could enter in assumptions and have it, you know, kind of puke out answers at the other side saying, well, here's what different costs look like. I'm perfectly willing to put in that work, but if there's nobody who really cares at this point, then I'll move on to other things. So, And does anybody have any comments on that model and kind of the things that came out of it, or questions, or et cetera?
This is Barry.
Go ahead.
Okay. It is complicated. It definitely, if somebody chooses to dive into it fresh, it's going to take them a couple hours to understand the knobs. Even if you summarize it to one page, understanding the logic that's going on behind the scenes and why formulas are changing what and those kinds of things. But I while it is complicated, I do believe it's valuable because it does, you know, after you do learn it a little bit, you do understand what's going on under the hood and why some of the assumptions made justify the end result. And so I believe that we should polish it up. I think it should be included, not necessarily as part of the final report, but certainly an attachment that if anybody chooses to come by and spend the time to learn it, that they should. The only thing that I think that we, you know, should the takeaway from it should be, you know, we need to find out what the key message is, or the takeaway message is, and that's, you know, again, a couple of pretty graphs to show that, you know, there is cost optimization by going down the clearinghouse model, which is what it kind of shows today. You know, I think there's probably a couple of tweaks on some of the adjustments, but at least it does put numbers to the validation that the clearinghouse model does seem to be the most cost-effective out of those. And then the only other comment that I would make, you know, certainly it seems to me with the 12 votes that we have, at the very least we're going to walk away with the enhanced bilateral. It would be interesting to see what kind of cost savings or efficiency gains we're going to be getting from that, which our cost model doesn't take into effect right now, I don't believe.
No, because the enhanced bilateral is kind of assumed as a baseline there, I guess, because there's still, there might be a minor cost savings based on the fact that you don't have to review as many contracts, so that would. It's a little hard to reflect that, but I could probably do that. I'd say and thank you for the input on that. It certainly helps clear my thinking on going forward and cleaning that up, so I will do that. The other comment I was going to make is that our current hybrid model isn't really modeled in there. Right? The clearinghouse that's in there is a more heavyweight clearinghouse, I think. So I can take a look at tweaking that and coming up with I guess a fifth
This is Barry. I don't think that it's important to put in the hybrid model. The question to me, there's 3 + 1. There's efficiency gains that you're going to get out of the enhanced bilateral, which, you know, that's fine. That those are always going to be there regardless of what of the other three models are actually chosen. So I don't think that it's important to try to marry the two. Personally, the takeaway is the add-on value of the other three, and that's where we just need to focus on the takeaway is, you know, which one of those three seems to be the most cost-effective. And, again, thanks.
Thanks, that was good. Any other comments or questions on this? Okay, well, I'll take it on an action item on myself to do that work I was talking about and provide a cleaner, easier-to-use model with the, at least from an inputs output section, and kind of hide all those other weird things behind the curtain, so to speak, but still provide access to it, obviously. And with some details on how it all works, so that the first-time user can hopefully get an understanding of it in less than a couple hours worth of work.
And if you want help with the graphing stuff, pass it over, and I'll add the finishing touches to that too.
Okay, great, thanks.
Yeah, Rod, this is Mikey. I would normally volunteer to help, but I'm a little over-volunteered right now, so. That's why.
No worries. No worries.
Okay.
This is just the kind of the cleanup at the end. This is taking a couple hours probably to get this straightened out.
Rod, do you think there's value in next week's call and spending 15 minutes kind of demoing it with folks on the phone, since you haven't gotten a lot of feedback on the list? Would you want to?
Yeah, we could do that if there's interest. I mean, I would certainly give me a goal to work towards. So if people are interested, we could do that.
I mean, we've got 90 minutes for the call. I think spending 15 minutes walking through, you know, what it is the model, you know, what it is the model has and what your approach to it, and just doing a little bit of demoing, I think for the people who haven't had time to look at it on their own, I think it would be valuable.
Okay. So, yeah, I was planning on that then.
So I see we've got 20 minutes left in the call, but no more items on the agenda.
One other thing I wanted to mention. Actually, I'll have to go back to item two. I was thinking about the how can we reach a consensus. So, in that survey, did we ever agree that the votes will be private? I mean, is it possible? Do you think it's possible to know who exactly voted for what?
Yeah, well, the report that Mikey sent me lists who voted for what.
Yeah, so in that case, we have five votes for the enhanced bilateral model only. Shall we, like, address the specific individuals that voted for that and ask them what their attitude is toward the hybrid model?
Before we do that, I was, you know, that vote, we really hadn't come down to this kind of lightweight hybrid model, if you will. Maybe we should you know, kind of re-poll based on where we're standing today and say, you know, maybe almost an up or down vote and say, here's what we think is the consensus. You know, is this amenable to you? Because remember, it was also a preferential poll, not necessarily I want this one and not that one, or I want this one and I can't live with the other one. So there's not a quantification there.
Well, what I thought about it is that everyone that voted for the enhanced bilateral plus clearinghouse is likely to accept the hybrid model because it's just the same, but clearinghouse made lightweight, right? But there may be some issues with people who voted just for the enhanced bilateral model. Maybe, or maybe not, they are, like, exactly against the clearinghouse, and we would like to get their voice of what the issues are. Because I have told what my concerns are. I would like to hear some other people's voices.
Barry, I second that. I would like to hear the concerns from the enhanced bilateral people of what issues or problems that they have with the clearinghouse.
With the hybrid model that was circulated to the list.
Exactly, yeah.
So perhaps we already have the consensus, but we just don't know that. As to the poll, repolling, I'm not sure if we have time for that.
Well, it certainly, you know, it certainly would be nice to get more people to vote. But then again, you know, there's been like the core 8 or 10 people that have been on most of the last, you know, handful of calls. So I don't know, you know, if those people actually have enough information at this point, you know, to vote. You know, maybe Mikey, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I mean, maybe we put another, you know, one more poll out, you know, noting the somehow the differentiation between what we put out last time and this time, and that is this, you know, this lightweight clearinghouse model that has, you know, limited or no, you know, authentication component. I know that we don't want to say all that in the poll. That's too, you know, too wordy. But I don't think there's anything wrong with, since we said we want to vote on the 29th, and putting out a poll that has, you know, all the responses due by Tuesday, with an anticipation that folks come to the call next Thursday to you know, talk about their positions.
This is Mikey. One way you could do the poll is to say, we're pretty close to a consensus around the proposal that Dave circulated to the list. Can you live with it? Yes or no? And then another question is, if you can't live with it, what are the issues that you see? And make that an essay-type question so that people write out what their issues are.
So I wouldn't say can you live with it, but I would say, you know, do you support it?
Well, actually, can you live with it is a little bit of a consensus thing. A lot of times in consensus, you get to a place where people have to make a hard choice.
Acceptable, I guess, would be a better way of saying it, though, right? You know, something a little less charged, I guess.
But
would this be acceptable?
Support is often more than people are willing to go, but they, at the end of the day, say, yes, I can.
This is Barry. I think another interesting question would, you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Just one other one is like an add-on. If you did vote, or if you do support the hybrid model, do you support ICANN being the clearinghouse, or do you support a third party? I think that's a very contentious one that I think we need to try to find where we really stand with that.
Well, I don't see the point of putting on this vote before we know ICANN's opinion on that, because ICANN's opinion may be that we in no way we will run this service.
I would say the other problem with potential issue with that is that people may conflate the two issues, it could be potentially a charged issue. Like, well, I don't want to provide any way for ICANN to have their mitts on.
I agree. Based upon some of the comments we heard earlier today, I think you're right. So it sounds like we do want to do one last quick poll, and the first question is. And Mikey, however, I'm assuming that you can handle one more poll for us.
Yeah, what would be nice is if somebody drafted the questions so that I can just drop, you know, so I can just be the poll mechanic, because I'm totally overwhelmed with vertical integration right now.
All right, well, you know what? We've got 10 minutes left on this call. Let's make up the two or three questions right now.
That'd be great.
So it seems like the first one is around the latest lightweight hybrid model that Dave Piscitello circulated. And I think the question is, Rod, what was the exact word that you used? Can you support this?
Or is this acceptable?
I'm going to write this down and I'll send it out.
Yeah, I think writing it out actually and sending it around is probably a little easier than trying to work it on the phone, because I would like to you know, have a preface this by, you know the group, you know, and you may have just said this, and I may have missed that. The group is, you know, it appears to be centering it on a consensus around this particular combination. would this approach be acceptable in your opinion? Or maybe I did just write it.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
And this is Barry. Just real quick, I think to try to maintain the baseline, the first question needs to be, you know, the exact same poll that we had last time. Or, you know, maybe we can shed the two models that we don't believe are going to move forward. But I would like to see where we stand on that 7 and 5 just as a baseline. Do you believe in the enhanced only or the hybrid? And then the second question is, all right, the hybrid, do you find acceptable or whatever Rod just said about the acceptance of the latest thought paper on the hybrid, et cetera, and then move on from there?
I think the tricky bit with that, Barry, is that the proposals are different now. And I think one of the advantages of just saying we've got a new proposal that's out on the list. If you haven't read Dave's post, and then, you know, zero people in on the post so they can find it, please do, and then tell us whether you find it acceptable.
So
it forces people to get away from the old iteration and on to the current almost consensus view, and really pulls them just on that.
But to me, that presumes that the poll takers of the last one, that the only reason they didn't vote for the enhanced or for the bilateral component or the hybrid is because of just the identity management component. And I don't believe that alone was the main reason why five people didn't vote for the hybrid.
Yeah, but I think, again, it's easier just to get them zeroed in on where we are currently and say, go read that. Go understand that really carefully. And then if you can support it, indicate that. And if you can't, tell us why, so that we can zero in on objections to the current proposal rather than clog the pipes with old proposals that we're sort of past that debate at this stage of the game.
Vladimir, I fully agree with with Mikey's suggestion. Can I make another suggestion to let Mikey concentrate on the vertical integration model, and shall we perhaps, can Craig or someone else launch this SurveyMonkey thing so that we can have the results by, say, next Tuesday when we have a planning call?
Well, this is Mark. Craig, I'm happy to do this. This is a small amount of administrative work, and I think we've burdened Mikey enough, so I'm happy to take this on as a work item.
All right, so we need to settle it, and we need to settle on the questions, and you'll launch it.
Exactly. Just craft the questions, and then I'll be happy to do it even later this afternoon.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take a stab at the questions and get something to. I'll get them around to Rod and Vlad, you know, as the co-chairs for a quick once over, and then off to Mark for launching. Does that work?
Yep, works for me.
Good for me.
Okay. Well, it's 5 to the hour, and I know I personally have a call in 5 minutes that I need to sort of get ready for. So, unless there's anything, you know, compelling that people need to put before the group right now, I vote that we break for the day and that we continue to talk on the list, and Rod's going to work on a demo for next Thursday, and I've got some questions to pose to ICANN, and Mark will launch the survey once we agree on the questions.
Yep.
Sounds like we're getting pretty close, folks. This is great.
All right, everyone. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
See you again. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.